Hello, I'm Father Charles Connor, a priest of the Diocese of Scranton, Pennsylvania. Welcome to this new series on the saint for the third millennium, Thérèse of Lisieux. We begin by asking the question, who was Thérèse Martin? Please stay with us.
Welcome to Saint for the Third Millennium, Saint Thérèse of Lisieux. In this series, Father Charles Connor presents the life, spiritual direction, and relevance of Saint Thérèse of Lisieux for today's Catholic and for the Church in all generations. Here now is Father Charles Connor.
Just about 6 years ago, Thérèse of Lisieux was declared a doctor of the Church. At that time, we presented a series of three programs on the Eternal Word television network, which had to do very specifically with her doctorate. And from the time that she was made a doctor of the Church, we've been giving a series of meditations on her in St. Patrick's Church in Scranton, Pennsylvania, where several hundred people come to honor her every year. As a result of the series on EWTN, and as a result of the programs honoring her at St. Patrick's in Scranton, came the idea for this new series, A Saint, The Saint for the Third Millennium, Thérèse of Lisieux. The Saint for the Third Millennium was a title given to her by Cardinal Cahill Daly, the retired primate of all Ireland and former Archbishop of Armagh. We've therefore taken his title as we have tried to develop the story of St. Thérèse of Lisieux and the spiritual legacy of Thérèse and the contributions to theology of Thérèse, put them all together into this new series. So we begin now, and we try to answer the question, who was Thérèse Martin? If she were living in any of the cities of the United States of America in this English-speaking country, we would call her Teresa Martin. But she was French, and therefore we call her Thérèse Martin. She was a young lady who came from an economically privileged background, a bourgeois background, I think we would have to call her, and she also was a young woman who came from very, very devout parents. Louis Martin was her father. Zélie Guérin Martin was her mother. And in the mid-19th century, these two met one day on St. Leonard's Bridge in the city of Alençon in the province of Normandy, in the heart of the lace-making industrial region of France. And we are told that the young lady, Zélie, looked at Louis Martin on the other side of St. Leonard's Bridge and said, "That is the man I am going to marry." She had come from the town of Alençon, and Louis Martin, who had been born in Bordeaux, lived in Alençon, moved with his family to Strasbourg, and settled once again in Alençon, the town where the two of them eventually met. And so they met then on St. Leonard's Bridge, began to court, and were married. They had both thought about religious vocations earlier in life. Louis Martin had wanted to be a priest, but he had great difficulty with the study of Latin, and so he did not continue his studies for the priesthood. Zélie Guérin had thought that she might have a religious vocation, as her sister had indeed had a religious vocation to the Visitation Order of Nuns, but rather it was in God's divine providence that Zélie married Louis Martin. When they were first married, they both took a vow of celibacy as husband and wife, until a confessor said to each of them separately, "No, you must love one another as husband and wife," and love one another they did. They became the parents of 9 children, 4 of whom died in infancy, and those 4 little Thérèse was very, very devoted to from the time she was a small child. Now, of the 5 surviving children, all 5 girls entered religious life. 4 of them entered the Carmel at Lisieux, France, and 1 became a visitation. Of those who became Carmelites, Marie became Sister Marie of the Sacred Heart. Pauline became Mother Agnes of Jesus and would be her sister's superior for a number of years in the Lisieux Carmel. Léonie, who led a very emotionally troubled life and who had 4 attempts at entering religious life, finally succeeded on the 4th attempt and became a visitation sister at Cayenne in France, some miles from Lisieux. Céline became Sister Genevieve of the Holy Face, and of course, Saint Thérèse of Lisieux, the youngest of these girls, became Thérèse of the Infant Jesus and of the Holy Face. She was born in Alençon on the 2nd of January, 1873, and Thérèse divided her life into 3 specific periods of time, as she wrote her magnificent autobiography, The Story of a Soul, that we shall refer to often in this series. The first period of her life was from her birth until she was 4 1/2 years of age, at which time her mother died. The second period of her life was from the age of 4 1/2 until she experienced her famous Christmas conversion in 1886. And the third and final period of her life was from that Christmas conversion up to and including the 9 years that she would spend in the Lisieux Carmel, the 9 years that she would write about so magnificently in what became manuscript C of her famous autobiography, The Story of a Soul. So she talks, first of all, about that first period of her life until she was 4 1/2 years of age. She still remembered, when she was in her 20s, kissing her mother goodbye in death. And it was shortly thereafter that the family left Alençon, where Thérèse had been born, as were all of her other siblings born in Alençon, and Louis Martin, as a widower, moved or relocated his family to the town of Lisieux. His brother-in-law, his wife's brother, Isidore Garin, who was a dominant personality and figure in their family life, was a pharmacist in the town of Lisieux, and he persuaded Louis Martin to move his family there. The pharmacy was located just down the street from the famous Cathedral of Saint-Pierre that you can visit today, and there's still a pharmacy on the very same spot, although, of course, it is not the pharmacy that Mr. Garin owned, Isidore Garin owned, so many years ago. So Thérèse, then, from the time she's 4 years of age, lives in this town of Lisieux at Les Buissonnais. Her father, you know, was a famous jeweler and watchmaker. Her mother had been very, very proficient in making and manufacturing lace, which she did until the time of her final illness in the town of Alençon. So Thérèse, as we said at the beginning, was raised in this bourgeois atmosphere, this economically well-off situation. Les Buissonnais was and is still a very, very beautiful home to visit in the town of Lisieux. Her relationships with her sisters were extraordinarily close. Her relationship with her father, Louis Martin, was every bit as close, if not closer, than the relationship she had with her sisters. And there are so many instances from her past life that show the closeness of her family relationship. For example, one time when she was very, very young, her older sister, Léonie, thought, "This little girl is too old to be playing with dolls. I'm going to give her this whole box of dolls and say, here, you take any of the dolls you want, because really you're getting too old to play with dolls anyway." And little Thérèse looked at this box filled with dolls and she said, "I want every one of them." Now you say, what's so terribly significant about that? Years later, this is what she wrote about it in her famous autobiography, The Story of a Soul. "This little incident of my childhood is a summary of my whole life. Later on, when perfection was set before me, I understood that to become a saint, one had to suffer much, seek out always the most perfect thing to do, and forget self. I understood, too, that there were many degrees of perfection. Each soul was free to respond to the advances of our Lord, to do little for him or to do much for him. In a word, to choose among the sacrifices he was asking. Then, as in the days of my childhood, I cried out, 'My God, I choose all.'" As she chose all the dolls in the box, she chose to do everything for God, and she related one natural incident, to the supernatural. It was something from her childhood that had always, always stayed with her. Also, when she was 10 years of age, she had read the biography of Saint Joan of Arc. And from the time Thérèse was 10 years of age, she was convinced, absolutely convinced, that she was called to be a great saint. "I received a grace which I have always looked upon as one of the greatest of my life. Because at that age, I wasn't receiving the lights I am now receiving. God made me understand my own glory would not be evident to mortals." It wasn't evident to mortals. When she was dying, one Carmelite nun said to the other, "What are we going to say about Thérèse in a necrology to send out to the various Carmels? She never did anything." "God made me understand my own glory would not be evident to mortals." Rather, it would consist in becoming a great saint. I don't count on my merits, since I have none. But I trust in Him who is virtue and holiness. God alone will raise me to Himself and make me a saint. And then a third incident happened in her childhood that accounts for not only her family closeness, but also her growing spirituality within the context of that family closeness. And to try to describe what happened to her in young childhood, we want to read a passage from this marvelous book, The Story of a Life. The Story of a Life was written by Bishop Guy Gaucher. He is the auxiliary bishop of Bayeux and Lisieux in France. Bishop Gaucher is a Carmelite. He has written extensively on Thérèse of Lisieux, far more than simply her biography. He's certainly one of the world-renowned experts on Theresian spirituality and on her life story. This is what Bishop Gaucher writes about an incident that happened to young Thérèse when she was 10 years of age. The maid, Marceline Housset, the maid in their home, gave testimony of a nervous trembling followed by seizures of fright and hallucination, which recurred several times a day. In the intervening periods, the sick child was in a very weak state and could not be left alone. After the crises, she remembered clearly what had happened. And Jeanne Guérin also gave an account of it. Now, Jeanne Guérin would be Thérèse's first cousin. She would be the daughter of Isidore Guérin, the pharmacist. Jeanne Guérin also gave her account. At the worst time, there were also several attacks when the motor nerves were affected, and she was able to wheel her whole body around, which she would have been absolutely incapable of doing when well. Thérèse herself wrote about it. The illness became so serious that according to human calculation, I would not recover for it. Well, on the day of her older sister Pauline's profession in the Lisieux Carmel, she did recover from it. She was in bed. And next to her bed was the statue of Notre Dame de Victoire, or as it has become known, Our Lady of the Smile. She always said Our Blessed Mother smiled at her. Most spiritual writers, students of Thérèse, believe that she did indeed experience an apparition from Our Blessed Mother. From that moment, she was cured of this very particular disease that had plagued her, and on she went to spirituality. Not without difficulties in her young life, of course. She was a student, for example, at the Benedictine convent in the town of Lisieux, and she said they were the most unhappiest years of her life. Not the 10 most, but rather just the most unhappy years of her life. The loss of her sisters to the religious life, they had become mothers to her after her own mother died. The loss of Marie to the Carmel. The loss of Pauline to the Carmel. Léonie. The only one left home after Thérèse was Céline to take care of their father. And then finally, the young girl's own scrupulosity, which we will consider more as this series goes on. Scrupulosity, this is usually a constant fear that everything that we do is a sin. In her case, scrupulosity was a tremendous fear that she had offended God in some way. She loved Him so much, and scrupulosity tortured this young girl, and she finally attributed the end of her scrupulosity to the heavenly intercession of her four siblings who had died in infancy and whose graves may be visited in the Lisieux Cemetery to this very day. But finally, there was the story of the Christmas conversion, Christmas of 1886. This really begins the final period of her life. Remember now, the first period was from her birth to 4 and a half. Her mother dies when she's 4 and a half. Her father takes the family from Alençon to Lisieux. From age 4 and a half until the Christmas conversion, we have just looked at some of the instances that have occurred in her life. And finally now, the Christmas conversion itself, 1886. There was a tradition among French children to have their stockings filled with all kinds of presents at Christmas time. But it was a tradition that was associated with small children. Thérèse's father, Louis Martin, was of the opinion that his young daughter was getting too old for this tradition. And so after Christmas midnight mass, 1886, Thérèse came home from the Cathedral of Saint-Pierre with her family. And she was walking up the steps to go up to her room to hang up her coat and her hat and so forth. And she would come down then afterwards and find out what kind of presents had been placed in the stocking. But she overheard her father make a comment as she was walking up the stairs. He said something to the effect, "I hope this is the last year that Thérèse will engage in this practice. She's getting too old for it." Now, Céline, her other sister, thought that that young Thérèse would simply break out crying. She was so tremendously emotional. She was given to fits of emotion as a young child all the way through. And so Céline, who knew that Thérèse had overheard her father's remark, said, "Thérèse, let's stay up here in the room for a while. Don't go down there now after what you heard Father say. After all, you know that you're simply going to break out crying. You won't be able to control your emotions. You'll make a scene when you go downstairs." Well, she did not break out crying at all. She was very calm, very reflective, and interestingly enough, it seems as though a change came over her at this particular moment of her life. She walked downstairs to the living room of the house, very calm. She opened her presents. She engaged in a very loving conversation with her father, with the other members of her family. But she knew in the deepest recesses of her soul that at that particular moment, on Christmas night, 1886, she was changed. It seemed as though the Christ child strength supplanted her own weakness. The strong character that she had from the time of her birth till she was 4 and a half, which she seemed to lose between 4 and a half and this Christmas conversion, is a strong character that once again emerged at a very given moment on this Christmas night in 1886. She was changed. A nearly 10-year struggle had ended, a struggle with scrupulosity, a struggle with emotion, a struggle with fear, a struggle with sorrow. That had ended on Christmas night, 1886. "My heart was filled with charity," she writes. "I forgot myself to please others, and in doing so, I became happy myself. I forgot myself to please others, and in doing so, I became happy myself." It's very, very interesting. On the same night, Christmas night, 1886, a young man walked into the great cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris as an atheist, took part in the evening prayer of the church on Christmas Eve, and walked out of the cathedral of Notre Dame a changed man. He would go on to become a great Catholic apologist. And at one time, he was the French ambassador to the United States of America. His name was Paul Claudel. It's also interesting to note the conversion story of Charles de Foucault. When did it take place? Christmas Eve, 1886, in France. It certainly seems as though the Holy Spirit was terribly, terribly active in the French nation on Christmas Eve, 1886. It's an amazing coincidence that the lives of these three individuals all experienced such a change on the very same evening. Well, we are now at the point in her life where she storms heaven. She knows she's called to be a religious. She knows she's called to enter Carmel, the Carmel at Lisieux, to join her sisters, Marie and Pauline. Incidentally, there really were 5 members of the family who ultimately went to the Lisieux Carmel. Marie, Pauline, Genevieve, Céline, rather, who became Sister Genevieve, and Thérèse, and their first cousin, Marie Garin, who was Isidore Garin's daughter. 5 members of the same family. Now, centuries ago, St. Teresa of Avila had said there should be no more than 3 members of the same family in one Carmel. But they made an exception at Lisieux because of this remarkable, remarkable family who were filled with spirituality. Well, first of all, she sought the permission of her father, Louis Martin, to enter Carmel. There's a beautiful statue at the back of Les Buissonnets today of her kneeling in front of her father asking permission. He was one of these men, one of these individuals, who was absolutely honored by the fact that the good Lord would be calling not simply Thérèse, his youngest daughter, But indeed, he was honored by the fact that the good Lord had called each and every one of his daughters to enter religious life. Interestingly, the uncle, Isidore Guérin, who obviously exerted a rather dominant role over the Martin family, Isidore Guérin was initially very, very opposed to his youngest niece, Thérèse, entering the Lisieux Carmel. Now, he did acquiesce, of course, but his initial opposition was quite strong. Thérèse approached the Bishop of Liège, of Bayeux, and asked his permission. But prior to the bishop, there is more to the story about her father. They were seated in the backyard of Les Buissonnets, and Louis Martin picked up a flower and gave it to Thérèse, and she placed it in her prayer book. This is the origin of the expression, the little flower. Her father, picked up a flower from the backyard and gave it to her as a gift. He talked about her sheltered life that she had led. Not a naive life. By no means did she have a naive life, but she had indeed led a sheltered life in Lisieux, and he had preserved her a little flower. The father then handed her a flower. He said to his young daughter, "You've lived obscurely in this obscure little town, but now God is calling you to something greater." When Louis Martin gave his young daughter that flower, the roots came up with the stem. And when the roots came up with the stem, Thérèse knew that she was going to be dislocated, if you will, from the very comfortable life she had at Les Buissonnets. Later on, when the stem broke, she knew that she was going to live a very short life. Well, the Bishop of Bayeux stalled and stalled, and finally Thérèse and her father made a pilgrimage through France into Italy to Rome to commemorate the jubilee of Pope Leo XIII, and they had a private audience with the Holy Father, and everyone knows this story, how little Thérèse broke the official instructions that they were receiving. Every French pilgrim on this pilgrimage who was in the audience hall that day said, "You are to simply go up to the Holy Father, you're to kiss his ring, and you're to keep going." She asked the Holy Father for personal permission to enter Carmel at the age of 15. And the Vicar General of Bayeux was standing next to the Holy Father, and he said, "Oh, Your Holiness, this is something that the local authorities are investigating." And Pope Leo XIII said to her, "My child, if it is God's will that you will enter Carmel, you will enter Carmel." And little Thérèse was still not going to be outdone. She said, "Holy Father, if you simply say yes, I can enter Carmel right now." And with that, she was brushed away. And Pope Leo XIII, of course, never realized that who was being brushed out of his presence was the saint of the church. Today, we read Mass to Thérèse of Lisieux. We do not read Mass to Pope Leo XIII, marvelous pontiff though he was. Well, the day did indeed come for young Thérèse to enter the Lisieux Carmel. It was the 9th of April, 1888. You can still see the door that she walked through the day of her entry. You can still see the beautiful head of hair that she had as a young girl, which was cut, of course, shortly after her entry into the Carmel. The hair is preserved in a reliquary outside the entrance, the main entrance, to the Carmel Chapel. So her life changed, and it changed very, very drastically. But from that pilgrimage that ultimately set the thing in motion, Thérèse certainly learned that she would have to disdain the world. And you know what else she learned? It was terribly important for her to pray for priests. Because some of the priests who were on that diocesan pilgrimage from Lisieux to Rome that year, as a young girl, she thought were very, very disedifying in their conduct. So Thérèse Martin has taken the great step. She has entered into the final 9 years of her life. Dorothy Day, who was converted from a life of atheistic communism to the Catholic faith, largely through the influence of Thérèse, has written a marvelous book which is simply titled Thérèse. It's another one we recommend to you. She gives a very, very beautiful description of daily life in the Carmel, probably one of the best descriptions that has ever been produced of the kind of a life day in and day out that Therese and the other Carmelite sisters were indeed leading and had led, really, in the Carmels for centuries. Dorothy Day then points out a wonderful picture of the kind of life that all of them led. And Pope Pius XII reflected on the life that Therese led and the spirit that she developed in Carmel many years after her canonization. Pope Pius XII made a very interesting observation. He said, if the entire world put into effect what little Therese Martin had put into effect in her own personal life living in the Lisieux Carmel, we could absolutely have a transformation within society. Pope Pius XII was absolutely correct. And as we continue with who was Therese Martin, we shall look a little more at how that great spirituality developed and how she became the great saint she became.
Join us next week at this time for Saint for the Third Millennium, Saint Therese of Lisieux, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.